I'm Simone Ahuja. I'm the founder and principal of Blood Orange. We're an innovation and strategy advisory firm. We're headquartered out of Minneapolis, but we've got teams all over the world. So mostly what we do is help large firms behave more like startups through a fast and frugal innovation methodology that moves ideas through to execution. Most of our clients are US-based, though we do work with clients around the world. We provide innovation and entrepreneurship consulting services, labs, and keynotes to anyone from 3M to Target to the World Economic Forum. I'm also an HBR.org columnist, and I serve as an advisor to MIT's Practical Impact Alliance. I'm the co-author of an international best-selling business book called Jugaad Innovation, which looks at frugal innovation or high-value, low-cost approaches to problem-solving, and author of a forthcoming book on entrepreneurship called Disrupt It Yourself. That'll be put out by HarperCollins, hopefully, next year.
All right.
Do you want to go ahead with yours?
Yes, great. Thank you, Simone. Great to be talking with you. Actually, I had a look at your book, Jugaad Innovation for Frugal Innovation. I haven't had time to read it yet, but I'm going to have to make a point of doing so now that
Excellent.
I'm speaking to you. So, yeah, my name is Andy Kars. I'm the founder of Lean Ventures. We're based here in Stockholm, Sweden. And what I could hear from what you were presenting is kind of similar. We're also innovation strategy consultancy. We help large companies with complex innovation problems. It's not just about tools and methods. It's about the entire strategy. How can we make that measurable? But we also work operationally with innovation teams. We try and see it holistically. It's not just a hackathon here or a workshop there, but really setting up clear, measurable goals about how do you define success in terms of your innovation efforts and how can we take you from A to B. So long-term, rather few clients than many, and working in-depth with a handful of clients. That's what we like to do. And my own personal background, just briefly, I'm an entrepreneur. I started 4 companies. I sold 3. I spent 16 years abroad. I'm Swedish originally. I moved when I was only 16, came back 16 years later, speaking Swedish like a 16-year-old, although I was 32. And now I've had time to catch up. But as I came back to Sweden, I started helping other entrepreneurs take their ideas to market. And that became a business in itself. I spent 8 years working with approximately 200 teams on everything from ideation to actual go-to-market strategies, and also towards the end of those 8 years, starting to apply lean startup methods to help them. And really 3 years ago or so, I switched target group from startups to large corporations, and I'm helping them with innovation. So that's my journey. Innovation entrepreneurship from beginning to end in different shapes and forms. Also spent a short period as a VC, so I have that perspective as well.
Well, I think it's this background of yours, from entrepreneur to guiding and advising other entrepreneurs, your VC experience, and now in the world of large firms and how they can act more like startups, is exactly why I'm really excited to talk about this topic of failure with you. You know, failure is such a funny topic to explore. In a way, I feel like it's discussed very often, but we don't get very far with it. I think it's something that gets a lot of lip service. So today, how do you explore uncharted territory without this kind of support, or if you're afraid that there'll be some very negative repercussions for trying new things, right? Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to dig into with you today is, who's taking the smart risks? How do we help people do that? And how do we reframe failure as learning? So learning becomes a kind of currency rather than something that's swept under the carpet or even penalized. So Andy, every organization says they're okay with failure. Is this really true in practice?
Great question. We actually did some research on this within Lean Ventures, and we published our findings in a report called How Large Mature Companies Tackle Innovation. And what we did was we spoke to 30 heads of innovation, or at least it was heavily skewed towards people in charge of innovation, and we asked them about their top 3 challenges in making innovation work in their companies. And 1/3 of the respondents said that our culture is inherently risk averse, right? Now, one might ask the question, why is the culture inherently risk averse to begin with? And I think oftentimes what happens in large companies is that people are expected to innovate on top of what they are already doing in their line function. So it's just slap on top of all the other responsibilities that they already have. And that's not very conducive to starting to build a culture that is willing to fail as part of innovating. So we need to introduce some form of support in terms of training, coaching. We have to see this more long-term. We have to build incentives around it and so on and so forth. But so coming back to your question, every organization say they are okay with failure. I think the big challenge is that they don't even get the chance to fail because they're so focused on their business as usual, where failure is not accepted. So really the starting point, how can we get people to even get the time to work with innovation?
Let me just go off the track a little bit, Andy, and feel free to answer this or we can scrap it. But I'm just curious because based on what you just said, it makes me think about what about those who are the people whose job it is to innovate?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Are those folks really allowed to fail?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, yes and no, so sometimes, depending on which company you're talking to, but also those people who are responsible for innovation, not always are they working full-time with innovation. They still have other responsibilities, but let's just assume that they do. Yes, if it's become part of the process, and that's why we need to introduce a process such as Lean Startup that integrates failing, or rather say smart failing or failing forward, like some people like to call it, as an integral part of what we do on a daily basis. So if you look at Lean Startup, we start out with some form of idea, business idea. We jot down our assumptions on a business model canvas. We identify our most risky assumption. And then we convert that hopefully to a measurable hypothesis. This is usually where teams go wrong, but let's say they do that. And then they design and launch an experiment. And then they test for that hypothesis. And oftentimes they will fail at doing this. But the failure is about learning about the customer, learning about the business model. So that becomes part of what they do for as a daily process. So failing becomes integral to what they're doing. But if we don't have that process, if we don't have that mindset, and we just tell people go off and innovate, then yes, then it becomes problematic from that perspective.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more. So if we think about rewarding failure, let's say there's an organization that doesn't have, say, a Lean Startup methodology in place. For those who don't have it, how can we reward failure?
Well, I wouldn't even start by in at that end. I would just back up and say then, okay, what process do you have? I mean, how do you work with innovation? What is your ideas around that? How do you define innovation? We need to look at the differences also between incremental and potentially disruptive or transformative innovation. There are different ways of measuring, different tools, and different people probably going to be involved in these areas. But if we're looking at the more risky the area is that we're venturing into, the more unknowns, the more we need to adopt some type of process such as Lean Startup or design thinking. I prefer to combine the two. And also, I like the idea of outcome-driven innovation or jobs to be done. So these are processes and methods that are designed to discover the unknown unknowns and try and understand who is going to be the customer, how are we going to reach the customer, how are we going to price our product, how are we going to package our product, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these unknowns, right? And if we don't have that, how do we even start thinking about rewarding failure? But once we can put a process like that in place, looking at the rewards part, I'm not so much necessarily for extrinsic rewards like financial rewards and so on when we're talking entrepreneurship. I don't know, I'd like to hear your experiences on that as well, but my experiences is that entrepreneurs are normally not given particularly large extrinsic rewards. It's more based on intrinsic rewards. And we like to use the framework that was developed by Daniel Pink. This is focusing on autonomy, mastery, and purpose, and to build an incentive structure around that. So really, do the teams feel that they're in control, autonomy, or are they being micromanaged or controlled by the managers? That's, of course, going to sap their motivation to work in this new way. And it's the same thing also with mastery. Are they allowed to build their capabilities and knowledge and understanding of what innovation is, the tools and methods and processes and how we measure innovation? Or are they just told to go and innovate and deliver results right away? That's an issue as well, right? And then last but not least, of course, purpose. Is there something more than just the financial gains or the share price of the company that they're working for? Something that brings more meaning to their lives. And there we like to use the framework of the UN Global Goals to have as a basis for discussing with management and leadership and the innovation teams, what is it that drives you to do what you do? What makes you get out of bed in the morning? And of course, these things to us, I think, is more powerful than simple financial rewards that people usually jump to when they think about how can we incentivize our teams.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Andy. In the work that we've done, we've seen something very similar, which is that financial rewards have a very short-term effect typically. Now, this can shift a little bit depending on the nature of the innovation. If it's something that's more experimental or incremental, something maybe that's a little bit more of an adjacency, that might be more true than, let's say, if you're moving towards something very disruptive or very transformative, which carries a lot greater risk, in which case there may be incentives such as actually receiving a portion of revenue, something that's a little bit more like a true entrepreneur's model that might motivate those folks for taking a risk where they might ultimately get pushed out, for example. Having said that, I completely agree. I think the intrinsic motivators are really among the best ways to reward failure. For us, we've seen things like exposure to senior leadership. Trust is huge. So in the culture, do we feel that we're trusted? Just like what you said, are we being micromanaged? One team I worked with recently created their own goals and metrics to which they wanted to be held accountable, which served great purposes. Number one, senior leadership doesn't know what those metrics should be, right? They don't understand necessarily the kind of nitty-gritty of why you're doing or how you're doing what you're doing. They understand sort of the larger picture around it. So it allows senior leadership to have something to grab onto, and then it gives the team the feeling that they're trusted and respected and something to be measured against. And other things we've seen are just things like holding up the team who's experimenting and innovating and sharing those messages on certain platforms. It could be a newsletter. It could be at a so-called failure conference. But those are the things that I've seen that entrepreneurs really appreciate. And I think linking to the last thing you talked about, it's that idea of passion and purpose. If you can kind of connect to that passion and purpose without and not extinguish it, which is, I think, something that happens in most large firms. So there's sort of a lack of identification of who those passionate and purposeful entrepreneurs are. And if they're out there, we often sort of tamp their spark with process. But if we can share what they're learning in different ways, I feel that gives a lot of fuel to the fire of these entrepreneurs.
And that the purpose for the team is aligned with the purpose of the company. So I think that's also important, because otherwise they might get alienated or marginalized over time, the innovation teams. But another thing that we look at, because I mean, we think entrepreneurs are a little bit different from entrepreneurs. When we talk about entrepreneurs outside of large companies, startups, they're definitely motivated by a big slice of the company. Yeah, so it's just the same way. I mean, a VC can't come in too early to take too big of a stake, because then they remove the carrot for the entrepreneur. But in a large company, I think they're more driven by other aspects. I think one thing for us that's very important is to try and identify To what extent the people who want to be entrepreneurs, it's not that we want to force them, but the ones that actually raise their hand and say, yes, we want to be on an innovation team, do they possess a growth mindset? Are they curious? Yeah. And if they have a sense of curiosity about what is this business model going to be that we're trying to build, and also an enormous curiosity for the customer, the empathy part. And if you can have that, then that becomes the basis for building some type of intrinsic reward system around that, right? But coming back to our research that we did, I mean, research, it sounds big, it was just 30 people that we spoke to, but 50% of the respondents, they said that they have no incentive structure in place to support innovation. And 25% said that they're working on it, but only 12.5% said that they actually have some form of incentive structure in place to support innovation. So there seems to be a lot of work to be done there. And I feel that many times large companies, they want to produce results so fast that they end up putting the cart before the horse instead of taking it slowly at the beginning so that they can move faster later. Really looking at all these things. I mean, who are going to be on the team? How can we support them? How are we going to do this long term? What's our vision, the values, the incentives around this? How are we going to measure innovation? There's so many things that need to be put in place before we just start introducing tools and methods and trying to shift people's mindsets and how to work in this new way. Right? So they have to work parallel, and then it's not always like that. Too much operational focus and too little on the strategy.
Absolutely.